You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Wisconsin wakes up here. Back to Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
It's 8:06 right now. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. We always appreciate it. You are listening to the Civic Media Network. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And good morning. I'm Brian Noonan. Third hour of the show. We're going to talk about the ceasefire deal. We're going to talk about yesterday's elections. And then we'll talk about friction maxing. So that's all coming up this hour. Two of those things you may understand. One, who knows, you might not have heard of it before. But now we will start with some headlines from the Persian Gulf and the Iran war, which is going on. Both President Trump and Iran have portrayed the last-minute ceasefire deal as a victory for their nations. The ceasefire pauses a spiraling conflict that has upended the global economy and sparked a historic oil crisis.
In other headlines, Iran's military will coordinate a passage of vessels through the critical Strait of Hormuz during the ceasefire. That's according to Iran's foreign minister. Trump said reopening the strait was a key condition of the ceasefire deal.
But again, there will be tolls now. Pakistan's prime minister has invited delegations from both Iran and the U.S. to Islamabad for talks on Friday. Earlier yesterday, Pakistan proposed the two-week ceasefire to allow for diplomacy. But as we heard last hour, this news coming out not too long ago, that the White House has not confirmed that they will be sending anybody to the talks, which is, again, feel free to correct me. Hard to have peace negotiations when you don't send anybody to the negotiating table.
I was going to say, it turns out you need more than one country or party in it to actually negotiate. That seems like a typical GOP tactic, though, doesn't it? Where we just aren't going to negotiate, even though we say that everybody else is to blame for no negotiations, but we're just not going to show up to the conversation.
And weren't we actually in negotiations when we started bombing Iran in the first place?
As far as I knew, yes, that's what we'd been told.
Well, that's what we'd been told. Yes, okay. So I'm not making this up.
No,
I'm not living in some sort of multiverse.
yes, you are, because that's what the current times show. But no, in reality, we had been told that there had been peace talks happening between Iran, Israel, and the United States. So we've been told a lot of things, especially in the last month, and none of it seems to have any rhyme or reason, literally, for anything that we've been told, including whatever happened yesterday.
Well, and they want to think that our memories are short. And unfortunately for them, because, well, we all have memories and we also have the internet, everything is there.
Everything lives in infamy in 2026. And it's kind of like this administration forgets that there are so many receipts that you can actually go get. But, you know, far be it from me to discourage them. In other headlines, the Israeli military today said that it will continue its intensified ground operations against Hezbollah in Lebanon. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's office claimed Lebanon was not part of the ceasefire, despite Pakistan's prime minister saying that it is. So what it really seems like is this ceasefire might not actually be much of a ceasefire at all? Question mark.
No. And it's Wednesday. We'll see what happens Friday on these talks. We'll see what happens today. We'll see if there's more threats to blow up entire civilizations. But that's the Persian Gulf. There has to be other stuff we need to know.
It's a wake-up call in more ways than one. Time for some you need to know.
Oh, well, it was time for that. we were talking about this yesterday, that the meeting was going to be held. Well, the meeting has been held. The Universities of Wisconsin Board of Regents voted unanimously to fire President Jay Rothman after about 4 years in the role. Rothman refused to resign, saying Regents never clearly explained why they wanted him out. Yes, that's why we're fascinated by this, because there's really...
so weird.
We don't know. Regents say they had concern about leadership and direction, but haven't shared specific details publicly. They're getting their walking orders like the administration. Don't give any specifics. Rothman says his performance review was mostly positive and that the decision felt already made. Republican lawmakers are calling the move political and accusing the board of acting out of partisanship. Some Republicans are now threatening to block or remove regents who supported the decision. Rothman had worked with both Republicans and Democrats, including negotiating funding deals and handling controversial issues like campus protests and DEI policies. Now, the university system has been dealing with bigger challenges, including declining enrollment and the closure of some branch campuses. It also comes as UW-Madison is losing its chancellor, adding more leadership uncertainty. Rothman's contract allowed him to be fired without a specific reason and without an appeal process. That's a bad contract.
I was going to say, that's a bad contract to sign if that's what you did.
Your attorney led you astray, brother. That was a bad move.
I still think...
But there's got to be something, right? What's going on?
Well, and that's just it. Are we ever going to find out what was actually behind this? And I love that the Republicans have gotten involved in this. As far as I understand, Board of Regents are usually bipartisan, non-political, because they want what's best for an education system. So the fact now that you're just calling it some sort of bipartisan effort is fascinating to me. But I feel like there's more and there's a bigger shoe to drop. I don't think we'll probably ever know what that bigger shoe is, but there's a lot of uncertainty around the UW system right now. And I think that's a little bit of a wake-up call, especially if you're a student, you're looking at potentially going there for higher education. I also think when we have as many funding issues as we have from the federal government, and there's so many of those programs that are tied into that funding all around the state, I don't know if you really want to see the dude who's been running it just all of a sudden be let go for no explanation, right? It's
now,
weird.
Parker, you are an alum of the UW system. You're probably getting to the point where they're going to start sending you solicitations for money so you can give to the system. How do you feel about this story?
I mean, I don't know. I never really knew much about Jay Rothman. I kind of just knew about him capitulating a little bit with the budget last year.
Okay. You knew about Jay Peterman, though.
Oh, I know Jay Peterman.
Okay, but not Jay Rothman.
Jay Rothman, no, not too much. No.
All right. Well, yeah. Thank you. You always add a substantial issue to the conversation. We appreciate that.
Yes.
Very much.
Anytime.
What other S do we need to know, Jamie?
In other stories, and this is some good news, American journalist Shelley Kittleson has been freed after militants from an Iranian-backed group kidnapped her in Iraq. It was part of Hezbollah just 1 week ago, according to two Iraqi government sources and a source familiar with that situation. Now, Hezbollah had Kittleson's name on a list of American journalists to target for kidnapping, at least according to multiple sources. She was abducted in Baghdad last Tuesday. That was on March 31st, if you're keeping track. A spokesperson for the Hezbollah militia said in an earlier post on the group's Telegram messaging app channel that Kittleson was being released on the condition that she leave Iraq immediately. Her whereabouts were not immediately clear. Two militia officials told the Associated Press that in exchange for Kittleson's release, Iraqi authorities would free several detained members of the group. Now, Kittleson was contacted multiple times with warnings or threats against her, including as recently as the night before she was abducted, at least according to a U.S. official.
Wow.
Now, it's also important to note that she does have some Wisconsin ties. Her mother still lives in the state of Wisconsin, so I'm sure for her community, this is probably some very good news to hear. But,
sure.
You know, here's the thing. I've got a couple of questions with this. I think it's fascinating being a reporter, having contacts within groups like Hezbollah. If you don't think that what reporters do is important, you would be wrong, because we are literally talking about Hezbollah contacting members of the Associated Press to give a story, right? So if you're skeptical about what reporters' work can actually look like, look no further than that, because not a lot of us have that in our old Rolodex, right? The other thing about this is the rhetoric around reporters has been so inflamed. And I'm so glad that she is safe as far as we know. I'm glad that there wasn't more danger to her or immediately. But at the same time, how long is this list? How long is this list of journalists that they have that they're going to be targeting? Because we know that this conflict is not ending soon. And
right.
I think that should be frightening to all of us.
Well, and I kind of get the bravado of, you know, you want to stay there, you want to do this. But she's a young woman who looked like she was traveling by herself.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, you have to heed the warnings that say, listen, you're being targeted. So you either have to hire some sort of security force, or you got to go.
Yeah.
And not that I'm very happy she got released and nothing happened to her. We don't always see that kind
right.
of result. And you have to weigh, is the story worth it? And I understand the dedication of a journalist, but then you need to do everything you can to try to protect yourself.
Right.
Because they got her right on the street corner, and she was by herself when they kidnapped her. There's video of her being abducted. So you got to be a little more responsible for yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. I just think it's fascinating. And for the disrespect as well that this administration gives the First Amendment and reporters, they're doing some heavy work. They're doing some heavy lifting out there. And they are the reason why we have comments from Hezbollah, right? Because, again, that's not something that most of us can say or maybe ever want to say. But this particular reporter was able to get a comment and then, of course, find out more about the release of Kittleson. So I do find it fascinating. And there's a lot, I think, wrapped up into that, especially about what this administration thinks about the First Amendment and how they treat reporters.
Yeah. Well, if you're expecting this administration to take care of reporters.
No, I don't expect that.
You're
new. I think it's just a sad state of affairs is all.
It's everything. How about a good state of affairs, Jamie?
This.
How about $7 Brewer tickets? We were talking about how expensive it is to go to a game. Well, the Brewers have heard your concerns. And so for a number of games through April and May and one in June, the Brewers are going to give you $7 tickets during a flash sale, but the flash sale only goes through today, so you've got to make sure you're getting your tickets now. They are for a couple games in April, the 15th, the 28th, and the 29th, then May 12th, 13th, 26th, and June 1st. So you get games against the Padres, the Diamondbacks, the Cardinals. That'd be a good one.
Yeah.
Tuesday, the 26th. $7 are for Loge Outfield, Loge Bleachers, and Terrace Level. You can upgrade those if you want. If you got that kind of money going for you, you got $17 burning a hole in your
pocket.
Feel
a little fancy.
Yeah, you could go to Field Outfield Corner for $17.
All right.
So that's not bad. But again, you got to go to Brewers Tickets and look for the flash sale, and you got to do it before midnight tonight. Or until the tickets are sold out. So if you're looking for a game and you wanted to take a bunch of kids and you're like, oh,
good
I don't
times.
Have $7, man. You can't beat it. You can't get a Starbucks for
$7.
You
can't even do the dollar menus anymore for $7.
No. Happy Meals, what, $27.50?
It's crazy. It's not so happy for mom and dad when they pay for it.
Yeah. So this is a really good deal, and it's one of those things that we always talk about how out of reach sometimes it is to take a family to a game. So the Brewers helping you out with a few games that way. When we come back, do you think this ceasefire is a real step toward peace, or are we just kicking the can down the road and after Friday it's all going to start up again? We will break down this ceasefire deal and talk about the war that one man wanted. We'll do all that after this. This is Daybreak. I'm Brian Noonan.
I'm Jamie Martinson. It is 8:19 right now, and you are listening to the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Now back to more of Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having us on today. You are listening to the Civic Media Network. It is 8:22 right now. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And good morning. I'm Brian Noonan. If you want to jump in and tell us what you think about this ceasefire, is it a real step toward peace or just a little kicking the can until we can start firing up the missiles again? We'd love to hear from you. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. That's the direct line to a good time and being sure you're nice to Parker, because to get to us, you got to get through him. That's how that works. So, yeah, we about an hour and a half before the deadline where Trump had said we were going to basically wipe out an entire civilization. He tacoed, as he always does. And thank goodness, because I'll be honest, I thought the worst all day yesterday.
Yes.
My rational mind was like, no, he's going to back out of this again. This is just him being his usual ham-handed, idiotic, blustery self. But there was a little part of me that went, he's nuts. And he could decide unilaterally, which is how he makes all the decisions, without Congress, he's going to just do something horrendous.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
That was the worry.
And I think that you're right. That was the scary part, because you didn't want to put too much hyperbole onto all of it. You didn't want to give in to the rhetoric, because you know that this person ends up multiple times and has, as a proven record in his presidential career, going back on things that he has said. And it does sometimes end up being bluster. But when you're literally talking about and posting about taking out an entire civilization, yeah, I think you have to take pause for a minute and say, is this actually something he's going to do? Or is this just more words coming from the president's fingers onto social media? Like, we don't know. And that, I think, is the most frightening part about where we're at. We can't actually count on him to know what is rhetoric or what is going to be truth. That scares me more than anything.
And his supporters will spin this as, look at how tough he was in the negotiation process. And let's break this down. Let's explain what exactly we know so far about this ceasefire, because I would challenge someone to defend what we have won from this. And if you think we have, you're welcome to tell us and share your opinion. I don't see it. I don't see the win on any level here. If you want to look back, this is... We had a deal with Iran about their nuclear weapons. Obama had put it together. It was in place. They were adhering to it. We were told in the summer that we had completely obliterated all their potential for nuclear weapons. Then we were told they're making a nuclear weapon and they're 3 months away from having it, which goes against something that was obliterated, but why quibble over details? And now, so everything that comes out has that asterisk of it's coming from somebody who has lied to us multiple times. So once it was announced, Trump went on to say that, you know, he posted on Truth Social, complete, immediate, and safe opening of the Strait of Hormuz. I agree to suspend the bombing and attack of Iran for a period of 2 weeks. This will be a double-sided ceasefire. Now, as he's declaring victory, of course, Iran is declaring victory, saying with their foreign minister saying that their military will cease their defensive operations if the U.S. halts its attacks. But the Strait of Hormuz, according to Iran, they said for a period of 2 weeks, safe passage through the Strait of Hormuz will be possible via coordination with Iran's armed forces and with due consideration of technical limitations. So that was the bluster coming out of both sides.
Yeah.
But what do we actually know, Jamie?
Well, Trump announced the ceasefire in a Truth Social post, saying that it was made on the condition that Iran agree to reopen the critical strait through which a fifth of the world's oil flows. So pretty important that we have the strait open, not only for the United States, but the rest of the country as well. Brian.
To clarify, wasn't it open before we bombed them?
Yes, it was open before. It was running just fine before. Oh, yes. And we didn't.
All right, thank you.
Nobody had to pay tolls either at that point.
Oh, that's interesting.
Just for a point of contention. Ceasefire had been mediated by Pakistan's prime minister and their military chief. He said, according to him, now Iran had put forth a 10-point proposal, which the U.S. views as a workable basis on which to negotiate, according to the president. Now, in an interview with the AFP news agency yesterday, the president described the deal as total and complete victory. But he would not say whether he would fulfill his prior threats to destroy Iran's civilian infrastructure if Tehran reneged on this agreement, only saying, quote, you're going to have to see, which means he actually has no plan and he has no idea.
In a
later Truth Social post, just past midnight, he said the U.S. would be helping with the traffic buildup in the Strait of Hormuz. It is like the fast pass we talked about earlier.
Yeah. It's like the people who line up outside of your kid's pickup at school with the orange vest. You, take her. Come here.
Yes.
No. Oh, I said you're going the wrong way.
Yes. And he added, quote, big money will be made because it's always about the money for this president, right?
May I ask a question?
Sure. Is it rhetorical do you want an answer? Because I'm not sure I'll know, but we'll try.
It's probably both because I think I know the answer. But does he really believe that Iran is going to let him help with anything in the Strait of Hormuz?
Yes, I think he actually does.
Oh, he does? Okay.
I think that would be my guess. I think he actually thinks that he has a say in this.
He still thinks he has leverage.
I believe he does. I mean, it sounds like he does. If you listen to his rhetoric you listen to some of what Pete Hegseth said today at the podium, along with Dan Cain, I believe they absolutely think they still have leverage in this.
Huh. Well, Iran is saying if the U.S. stops their attacks, Iran will hold back. They also will coordinate, but it's got to be with tolls. And this is... There's a lot to talk about with this plan. We will continue talking about it as the days go on. But right now, we must take a break. And when we come back, we'll talk about yesterday's elections here in Wisconsin on the Civic Media Network.
Local news, community stories, and the conversations that matter most. Now, more Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
Good morning. Welcome back to Daybreak. If you want to get involved in the program, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. I'm Brian Noonan.
I'm Jamie Martinson. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. So, Brian, there was just a wee bit of things happening yesterday in the state.
Yeah.
We had an election, and I know for a lot of people it felt like a quieter election just based on the numbers that we were seeing and the polling that we were seeing. But it turns out that there was a lot of action happening across the state last night. And joining us this morning to tell us about some of what we were seeing is Brittany Carlone. She is the state government and politics reporter at Wisconsin Watch. So good morning. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Look at you. You're bright. You're sunshiny. Like it wasn't even a late night or anything.
Honestly, I'm a bit surprised as well.
It was a relatively, I think, quick night if you were watching the headlining act, we'll call it, with the Supreme Court race. So I think we should start right there. Obviously, Chris Taylor won, the liberal-leaning judge won that election last night. About 60% of the vote is what I saw come through. Was there anything that surprised you, Brittany, about that particular result or that race in general?
I think the conversation around the state in the last couple of months as we've gotten closer to this election has been, the liberal justices in these past contests have been very successful. But so I think people were kind of going along that line, like this might be where this goes. But because this was such a quieter election, there was no court majority on the line, I think people were kind of cautiously going, we don't really know what's going to happen. And then look, pretty much 35, 36 minutes after polls closed for the numbers to come out, and then to see how well Taylor performed in counties like Jefferson County, Ozaukee County, some of these like really...
There was a sharp shift as far as even the very rural counties. Even if they still voted for Lazar, they did not vote in the margins we had seen in especially 2024, correct?
Yeah, that's that. And I haven't had a chance to really dig into those numbers yet, and that's going to be a lot of my project today. But some of those initial county numbers, I think, really surprised a lot of people, and especially for Democrats and like liberal leaning folks last night that were hoping for a big Taylor win. They got what they wanted.
Yeah, it was a show for sure.
Brittany, there was a lot of talk, as and you've been covering the campaign, that Maria Lazar kind of disappeared. We didn't see her making as many appearances. We didn't hear from her. It seemed to come after she aligned herself with Scalia. Do you think that played into the fact that she got defeated so soundly?
So I don't know if I necessarily saw that she disappeared. I do know that in this last week or so that she made her appearance on the WISN debate. She had a across the state like final days tour. I saw her at the Dane County Republican Party headquarters. But I think the big thing that might have been the issue in this case was just the gigantic fundraising advantage that Chris Taylor had over Lazar. I mean, if you even look at the contributions that the state political parties provided, the amount of money that the Wisconsin Democrats gave to Chris Taylor, and then the amount of money, I think it was maybe like $65,000, the last report that I looked at that the state Republican Party gave to Lazar, when it might be a disappearing act when you just don't have the money to get your name out there.
Yeah.
It could be too,
yeah. I mean, this race is going to expand the liberal majority from 4-3 to 5-2. In your work, what does that actually mean in terms for Wisconsin and this panel of judges?
Yeah, I mean, there was a portion of when I was growing up when the conservative court majority was a big factor in state government, and I think this is the 5-2 majority, I believe, the state will have going into 2030, and it'll continue to be a factor in major politically charged cases, including as we head toward, 2030, we'll have a new census. There'll be new congressional redistricting. There are even challenges in court right now at this point when it comes to the state's congressional maps. And there are big cases that the court could see coming forward, like collective bargaining rights challenges related to Act 10 that are still making their way through the court system. When you have a 5-2 liberal majority, that is a big factor in state government. And then when we think about later this year, the battles in the for power in the legislature and who will take control of the governor's office, when we think about the last 8 years with a divided state government and how the court, especially following the 2023 shift in the majority where liberals actually got control, they really became a factor in these last couple of years in major decisions.
We're talking with Brittany Carlone. She is the state government and politics reporter at Wisconsin Watch. We're talking about the shift in the majority on the Supreme Court, the state Supreme Court, now a 5-2 majority with the win of Chris Taylor last night. So liberals in this state have won several of these races in a row. You mentioned that as well. What does that say about where Wisconsin voters are right now? Are the GOP, are they, and the more conservative branch, are they giving up on these Supreme Court races investing their money elsewhere? Because we saw a lot of money go into the local fronts. What are you getting as you talk with people?
That's a great question. I did see a lot of social media chatter last night about what does this mean for the future of the Republican Party? Who would be the next conservative justice or the conservative? Well, who could be the next conservative justice, or who would even want to put their name into these kinds of races when put their name into these kinds of races when there's just so little bit of a chance for success based on what these kind of performances have been. I think I also had an interesting conversation these last couple of days where people were asking, why didn't Republicans invest more money? And it's also a question of, does that mean that they might be trying to save their resources for the elections later this year? So it's a great question.
Go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, Brittany. So there's been a lot of talk about property taxes in the state. So there are a lot of referendums. What did you see as far as these referendums? Because, you know, it's we got to worry about property taxes, but we got to have these referendum for the schools. So how did it look?
I'm having a little trouble hearing him.
A little trouble. Okay.
I heard property taxes. There we go.
There we go. There we go.
Yeah. So I was asking about the referendums.
Yes.
Because that's been the big issue: referendums, property taxes, and the funding of schools. So how did things shake out last night?
So this is another one of my projects to look into today. But I haven't quite seen what the pass fail rate was for the 72 school districts that went to referendum overall. I did see, I believe Whitefish Bay had a gigantic, I believe Capital referendum, which is getting debt for construction mm-hmm. projects. I think we were talking about Dodgeville before we went on the air here, and they had an operating referendum, which it looks like failed for the second time mm-hmm. in these last 2 years. So I haven't had a chance to look at the full pass-fail rate across the state, but it really is a lot of these districts that went to referendum at this time were really coming in at a difficult moment where people are really feeling the pain of costs going up, their property taxes rising, and then school districts, especially school district leaders that I spoke to ahead of the election, were just saying school funding rising with inflation over these last several years has just not risen at the same level. So districts say they need more money.
Yeah.
They're just also struggling with costs. So it'll be really interesting to see going forward, A, what districts have to do to cut costs to deal with the fact that these referendums have or have not passed. And then as well, the state's still negotiating over that $2.5 billion yeah. surplus. And what factors into those negotiations going forward too?
I was just going to say, since you spend time, and we're talking with Brittany Carlone, she's the state government and politics reporter at Wisconsin Watch. Since I'm assuming you spend a good portion of your time over at the Capitol,
mm-hmm.
And you probably hear some of these conversations, do you think this gives the GOP, with the fact that some of these school districts are going to have to look at closing facilities or either consolidate with other school districts, do you think it gives the Republicans and the Democrats more of a negotiating table? Do you think it brings them to the table, or are they just going to stay out and say, whatever happens, happens, the election's coming, we'll let the chips fall?
I could see this go both ways, potentially. I know Republicans have really been leaning into the impacts of what they say Governor Evers' 400-year veto when it comes to raising revenue limits for school districts. That's been a big talking point, even, I think, for Tom Tiffany's campaign mm-hmm. for the governor's office later this year. So I don't necessarily think that they want to let go of something that could really, they believe, could help Republicans later this year. But also, I know Democrats, especially ahead of the election here, were really pointing out, hey, Republicans haven't funded schools to the level that they should have, which is why we're seeing all these referendums. And so it really could go either way. I think Governor Evers definitely wants to see more funding for schools, but I wonder if like that helps anybody at this point going yeah. forward yeah. after yesterday.
So for a lot of these school districts, these weren't really new projects. And as you mentioned, Dodgeville, for instance, this was a referendum they'd already had on the ballot once. It failed for the second time. And for a lot of these school districts, it's really just to keep their schools running. Are voters understanding that, or are you getting the sense that it really does? And I get it. I totally get it. Is it coming down to the dollars and cents of what they're able to afford with their own property taxes?
When ahead of the election, I think I spoke with the superintendents in Appleton and Wisconsin Rapids, and they both had operational referendums as well. And so it's less of the let's build new school districts and more of we need additional resources to provide things mm-hmm. for our students going forward. And I think they really struggle with just making sure they get as much information out there about,
yeah.
hey, you may be seeing these things about property taxes, but this is what it helps with your students.
Yes.
So, yeah.
And with these referendums that failed across the state, what is that actually going to look like for the families when you talk to the school districts? What ends up getting cut for some of those school districts?
I think from my understanding, going with the districts that I've spoken to so far, they hopefully will look at those additional administrative costs, like where can they slice things that are less likely to impact students in the classroom. But when you have districts that have failed 2 years in a row, like Dodgeville, they may need to have some really difficult conversations with the community.
Yeah, absolutely. And we have about a minute left. And with about 200 days until the midterms, just over 200 days, because elections in this state never stop.
No.
What would you recommend our listeners and our online viewers be watching and paying attention to as we head into what is going to be yet another election cycle?
Oh, yeah. Later today, I'm going to a gubernatorial Democratic candidate forum. So that's going to be the big thing going forward. But definitely try to stay engaged with what's happening in your local races, because we're also going to see not only local probably elections later this year, but also there's going to be a lot of power struggles over who's going to control the legislature. So find a local news source that you love and trust.
Oh, there's one. It's called Wisconsin Watch. We'd love to have people go check it out. Thank you so much, Brittany Carlone, state government and politics reporter at Wisconsin Watch. Big night across the state of Wisconsin yesterday, and we'll hear more, I'm sure, about these referendums and these school districts soon. It's 8:48 right now. I am Jamie Martinson. This is Daybreak.
And I'm Brian Noonan. This is the Civic Media.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Now back to more of Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
Good morning. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Civic Media Network. It is 8:52. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And good morning. I'm Brian Noonan. Yesterday, if you were with us, and if you weren't, shame on you. Really, we're here every day. So, but you can catch up. You can always catch up. Go to civicmedia.us. Listen to all the podcasts. It's like binge watching your favorite show, but it's binge listening your favorite show. So you can go and binge listen to everything we've done before so you don't feel left out. But we talked about how passive activities like watching TV can lead to higher rates of dementia. Well, I don't know if my computer was listening, because then I found a story about friction maxing. And no, Parker, I know you think that's when the Mormons try to skirt around their premarital sex issues. It's not. It's not friction maxing. That's not it. So stop sending me pictures. Is this friction maxing? No, that's not it at all.
Wow. Did not think that's where we were going.
Of course not. That's the beauty of me.
Keeping you on your toes.
I'm always impressed by you, Brian.
But friction maxing is a thing. So here's the thing. When you're, because we have everything doing stuff for us, we have spell check, we can look up a name right away without having to think about it. If we think we know something, instead of puzzling over it, we just look it up. Well, we kind of lose something in our brains. So now we have to have friction maxing, which according to a expert in, she was reintroducing challenges. She's an expert in neuroscience. So in an article in January, she says, you need to reintroduce challenges into your life. Jamie, I know your life is way too easy. You don't have a lot going on. You don't have a lot of things that keep your mind occupied. But they're saying that cooking dinner instead of ordering on Uber Eats can help reorient people to discomfort and make us more human. So we need to be a little less comfortable. We need to max our friction so that we can engage our brain.
Who is this
now,
woman?
Well, again, I sometimes just report the things. I don't endorse them. Because you and I could agree that we easy days would be nice.
I would love like an easy day. And she's trying to take away my Uber Eats on those non-easy days.
Well,
so.
According to experts, a frictionless life may not be the best for your cognitive function, Jamie. So you need to keep that friction.
I am telling you, when I have to use my app to Uber Eats, I am using cognitive function to make sure that I don't screw it up. I can argue that point. I'll argue that point.
All right, fair enough. We'll get somebody in here. Because as you know, the brain's number one job is to help you survive. So throughout our daily routines, according to these folks, the brain conducts cost-benefit analysis to determine whether a choice is worthwhile. Mine is out to lunch. My brain does not have a business degree. It does not understand cost-benefit analysis.
Who is thinking like this on a daily basis? Do people actually have time to sit down and think like this? I want to know who
researchers. Researchers do this. That's what researchers do. That's why you get these grants. And you go, oh, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to come up with my brain having a cost research analysis.
I'm not smart enough to do this stuff.
Well, that's why we're not researchers.
I guess guess but if I was using my cognitive function, I would be.
Well, you know this. The brain responds to rewards, dopamine hits that come from instant gratification. You ever had one of those?
Oh, gosh, yes. Anytime somebody hands me a piece of chocolate, totally. There we go.
All right. So you get that part we both get. So over time, frictionless living could be detrimental, according to brain health researcher Mark Milstein, who you may have heard of. I never have. But he's a brain health researcher. He said, taking on friction-filled challenges, such as learning new things, is like investing in a financial account as you age. Research on cognitive reserve theory shows these things cause the brain to form new connections, which increase overall reserve. Parker, it's not too late for you. I'm a lost cause. My brain IRA is depleted. So
I'm done.
We can't.
I got nothing left.
I'll see if I can carry the weight here for the three of us.
Please do. Please do. Because
I trust that Frank can carry himself.
Can he?
I hope.
Okay.
We'll have to see.
Well, I guess jury's out.
I have good news for both of us, Jamie.
Okay.
Because even if our frictionless pathways in the brain are well-worn, we can take a few simple steps to override them. You could play a puzzle or a game that you're not good at.
I hate games.
You could learn something new, like friction maxing.
There we
go. We've learned something new today.
That's right.
So our brain is, you could use a recipe to make it. You made Juicy Lucy's the other day.
I did. I didn't use a recipe, but I did cook.
You used a recipe.
There we go.
So you're doing all the things. Maybe you see a friend in person.
I can't just text them? I would rather text them.
No, you got to see them and have a conversation.
I always go for text. Yeah. Always go for text.
It's getting hard now.
Yep.
Now it's getting hard.
What about not looking up an answer?
Making yourself actually... Now, how am I going to know anything?
Well, if you know it, if you think you know it, instead of looking it up, try to figure it out first.
Well, I
and then once you realize that your brain is mush, then look it up.
Well, I was just going to say, I usually do think I know the answer, but I need to look it up to make sure that I'm not wrong because I don't want to be wrong either and give somebody wrong information.
See, that's where we differ. I usually figure I don't know the answer and I'll look it up or I'll make it up without doing a whole lot of thought because then I'm off the hook because people go, really? I go, yep. And then I walk away and the conversation's over. And when they finally figure it out, they go, wow, he was wildly inaccurate.
That seems like much better use of the brain to me than playing a game or anything else. Like, you know, doing those types of things with other people, especially if they're other people that I have to now see in person to stimulate my brain and keep it cognitive healthy.
There's a lot of people putting a lot of stock in this get your brain right. But, you know, get your brain fit. A lot of people, we got to motivate your brain. You got to keep your brain sharp. I don't know. You get to a certain point in your life, you know, if you just want to sit there
it's
and
just
veg.
It's just easier to drool in your cup. Really.
That's why God made sleeves, Jamie.
Nobody expects anything from you when you get to that point.
Right.
there's other people who want to make decisions for you, and life just becomes so much easier at that point.
Well, look, that's what Parker makes decisions for us every time he starts that music to tell us to shut up.
That's right.
I'm like, okay. So that's it. Yeah, we're done. We'll be back tomorrow.
We made it.
It's Thursday.
Is it Thursday?
Tomorrow's
Thursday.
Will be Thursday.
All right.
Today's, okay.
All right. I'm
Tomorrow's
confused.
Tomorrow's Thursday. I said we'll be back tomorrow. It's Thursday.
I know. I just didn't know what day it was today.
Just
so
keep
that
doing
tells you everything you need to know. But we made it through another day. It's 8:59. This is Daybreak. I'm Jamie Barton.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.